Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Two young people from our area with two very different reactions to 9/11. One, a young woman for whom September 11th was a test of her family's faith.
One news anchor after another said that the terrorists were Muslim and that they did this in the name of Islam. But that made no sense to me. I remember my dad telling us,
"True Muslim will not hurt anybody else."
A true Muslim will not hurt anyone else.
And a young man for whom September 11th was a test for his ideas about politics and patriotism.
9/11 was the first real news story I ever followed. It was my introduction to politics, world diplomacy, war, the economy. It affected everything.
This is your Pearl Harbor.
I may have been the youngest neocon ever.
Both those clips from forthcoming pieces by WNYC's Radio Rookies Project, which puts microphones in the hands of New York area teens. And both those rookies join me now as we continue our Decade 9/11 series of conversations. Brendan Illes was a first grader in suburban New Jersey on September 11th, 2001. He's now a rising junior in high school. Norhan Basuni was in seventh grade. She's now 22 and just graduated from the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Brendan, Norhan, welcome to WNYC.
Hi.
Hi, thank you.
And Brendan, you were telling me off the air, you're from Summit, New Jersey.
Yep.
You have to boil your water still after the hurricane.
Yeah.
Your home doesn't have power. So thanks for even making it down here today.
No problem.
And one of the ways that we're structuring our 9/11 conversations is to pair people from different groups or professions together. So also joining us is Clifford Channon. He's education director at the 9/11 Memorial and Museum, and he's going to talk with both our radio rookies. Cliff, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Now, I want to play a longer clip from Norhan's piece. This is about a minute of Norhan describing the immediate aftermath of the attacks on her family.
On the afternoon of 9/11, my father picked up my brother and me from school. We sat in the living room watching TV and waiting to find out if my mom was okay. She was walking home from work in Manhattan.
And now you have to move from talk about a possible accident to talk about something deliberate.
One news anchor after another said that the terrorists were Muslim and that they did this in the name of Islam. But that made no sense to me. I remember my dad telling us,
"True Muslim will not hurt anybody else."
A true Muslim will not hurt anyone else. After a while, he just turned off the TV and put on the Quran.
We didn't know what to say to you.
My mom says she didn't know how to explain Al-Qaeda because she didn't know what it was herself.
We told you things, well, we hard for us and we have to be patient.
That from the Radio Rookies piece, forthcoming from Norhan Basuni, who was in seventh grade on 9/11. Norhan, your mother's words there, things will be hard for us and we have to be patient. Can you talk a little more about how you felt when you first heard the word Muslim being used in connection with the attacks?
I mean, definitely as a seventh grader, it was extremely confusing. All of a sudden, it seemed like so much of what I believed in, the world just didn't understand. And so when my mother said, and, you know, those words came out from both my parent, you know, both my mother and father's mouth, you know, things are going to be hard, you're going to have to be patient. And even at that point, I really didn't quite understand what I was up against. And so I would hear, you know, be patient when people say things, you know, you need to understand that they just don't understand or they don't know. And so you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. And so at that point, it was just, I started to kind of sit back and try to take in and try to absorb all that was going on at this time. And so little by little, as I explained in my piece, I started to hear news anchors talk about, you know, well, the Muslim extremists and these Muslim terrorists. And so all of a sudden, I identified myself as a Muslim. And so growing up and hearing those words, Muslim terrorists, associated with such harsh words, it made me feel at ease with my identity as a Muslim. And so, of course, aside from being patient, I also wanted to understand why and how. And how does this affect me, and how does this affect all the Muslim Americans today?
Why did hearing the words Muslim terrorists, if I heard you correctly, make you why did it make you feel at ease with your faith, maybe as opposed to the opposite?
I mean, it made me feel at ease, at unease is what I meant.
At unease.
At unease is what I meant. I apologize for that. It made me feel at unease because, You know, I didn't like hearing those two words put together. I didn't want, you know, I didn't want anyone to associate me because I'm a Muslim. Now all of a sudden they need to tag along the word terrorist or Muslim, you know, or extremist. You know, granted, they are Muslim extremists, but they don't represent me, nor do they represent the Muslim Americans, nor do they represent Islam. And it was so hard to convey that to so many Americans after 9/11.
Yeah. Clifford Channon, Education Director at the 9/11 Memorial and Museum. What are you thinking as you hear Norhan's story, and what might you like to ask her?
Well, I'm thinking first of really the wonderful job her parents have done. They obviously imparted values to her that are important to their family, and that, you know, those values, while they need to be examined, also need to be held close. And so, you know, I'm thrilled to hear her speak as well as she does. And also, frankly, having heard a number of the other Radio Rookies reports, I mean, and this is the complexity of the situation in the post-9/11 world, they are all equally eloquent, and they take very different perspectives. And so sorting out all of these views, as deeply held as they are, as passionately expressed as they are, is extremely complicated. There's not really a clear path automatically visible through all of this emotion and all of this deep conviction. And so I guess as I'm listening to Norhan speak, I'm, you know, very interested in, you know, how she interacts with, you know, the reality of the world in which there are many versions of Islam out there, in which the version that her parents taught her and her community perhaps reinforced is one that is highly contested in many ways by people not just like bin Laden, but by people who take a view of Islam that, for want of a better word, is much harsher, and they frame their view of Islam in extremely clear religious terms and so on and so forth. And that poses a problem for individuals and also for communities that have to deal with this diversity of interpretations of what Islam is.
You want to ask Norhan anything?
Yes, the question really is about how she perceives this, you know, vast number of interpretations, sometimes conflicting, of her faith.
Absolutely. I mean, one thing I always tried, I get asked this question a lot, you know, if Islam is such a religion of peace, why is it that there are so many individuals all over the world, and why did these terrorists do this in the name of Islam? And so I just want to say that they can take any line from the Quran, they can cherry-pick any verse that they want and turn it into a way where it will best kind of defend, you know, their motives. And so my reaction to this is that, you know, we have lived amongst Muslims for so many years, since the start of, you know, when America became America. You know, our fathers and grandfathers and brothers and uncles have served in American wars, you know, fighting for the same freedom that this country stands for. And so before 9/11, did individuals really believe that Muslims were violent individuals and that Islam, you know, was a violent faith preaching and encouraging Muslims to act the way that these terrorists did? Absolutely not. I mean, they'll just sit there and stare at me, well, you know, I don't quite remember. And the truth is that they didn't. So instead of basing, you know, their opinion about Muslims based on these terrorists, on these few individuals that don't represent us, how about base it on those individuals that you've lived next to who have been your neighbors for years and who have, you know, served in your communities for years? And it's hard to constantly remind people. And, of course, I mean, it's a struggle to continually to be patient, to always have this understanding patient face, you know, walking around all the time with this understanding patient face. And so we continue to do this because we want Americans to know that, you know, we're Americans too, and being Muslim does not take away from our American identity. And so my thing is that how I deal with this is to continue to be patient and to know that any time that I react in a way that doesn't seem, you know, I may not be as patient sometimes, but people need to understand that that's not a reflection of my faith. That is a reflection of me being an individual, me being a human. And so that's pretty much what, you know, how I tried to go about it.
The discriminated against understanding patient face. That's an interesting concept. Anything you want to ask Cliff, like if there's a 9/11 memorial and museum, which of course there is, and you, with your experience, were to go to it, what would you hope to see there that would authenticate what you've just been describing and help communicate it to others? Norhan, anything come to mind?
I'm sorry, can you repeat your question again? The line got cut off.
Just because we have the 9/11 Memorial Museum director, mm-hmm. what do you hope to see when you go visit that museum, if you do, that kind of would authenticate your experience for others who come from everywhere to this spot?
I would like for the message to be conveyed that everyone was affected by this and that, you know, Muslims are not trying to be the victim in this, but I would like to see, you know, the diversity that this, you know, that this city stands for and this country stands for as well. I would like to see that diversity be conveyed and to show and to prove that, you know, Muslims were kind of hurt by this. We were affected by 9/11. We did lose loved ones as well. I was just recently reading a report about, you know, a survey done of the Muslim victims of 9/11. And it's so sad because I wonder, do Americans look at these Muslim victims and not feel like their lives were as valuable or, you know, their families mourning over their loved ones isn't as hurtful or isn't as, you know, valuable as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And so I would like for that to be conveyed that Muslims were affected by this and hopefully
Cliff, I'm sorry, go ahead and finish the sentence. And hopefully that...
You know, and hopefully that more Americans will start to see that, you know, we're no different and that we're mourning a loss as well. And if not a loss of a loved one, then we are mourning the loss of something in our city, in our country. And, you know, we are also fighting for the freedom and hoping and praying for the freedom of this country as well.
Cliff, would Norhan be happy when she comes and visits your museum?
Well, happy is a complicated word in relation to our overall museum presentation because of just the difficulty of what the events of the day are. But I do think that Norhan will find that we've made an effort to place Muslims throughout the story, that she's exactly right. There were Muslim victims and families mourning in the aftermath. There were many Muslims who participated in rallies of solidarity, both here and abroad. There, of course, were first responders who are Muslims. So one of the issues, because, of course, we've thought of this and been asked this question, and obviously the perpetrators of the crime come out of the Muslim world and acted on behalf of what they understood to be a requirement of their faith.
Right.
And so that's a very difficult fact, obviously, for Muslims, I assume, but for everybody as well. So that's the story, but we want to find the other Muslims in the story who were placed in the buildings, who had one of the towers was used as a regular prayer space by Muslim worshippers who worked in the building. We're trying to situate Muslims all throughout this story.
We'll continue this dialogue and expand it in a minute with Clifford Channon, Education Director of the 9/11 Memorial and Museum, and WNYC radio rookie Norhan Basuni. We will now talk more to the other WNYC radio rookie who is with us for this, Brendan Illis, who was a first grader in Summit, New Jersey on September 11th, 2001. We'll play a little more from his piece and follow up on the clip where he said he thought after that he was the world's youngest neocon and everybody will talk to each other. Stay with us, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC in our series 10 Conversations for the 10th Anniversary with WNYC radio rookies Brendan Illis and Norhan Basuni and the Education Director of the 9/11 Memorial and Museum, Clifford Channon. Brendan Illis, as I said, was a first grader in suburban New Jersey. Were you in Summit then too?
Berkeley Heights,
September 11th, 2001, first grader. Now, we just heard how because of her faith, Norhan had the event sort of thrown back at her. But you chose to dive into the implications of 9/11. We heard yourself in the first clip, and we'll play more from your piece, describe yourself as the youngest neocon ever. How so? What happened?
Well, when I was young, I started listening to a lot of talk radio, conservative talk radio especially. So one of the shows I listened to a lot was Michael Savage. And so being young, I just kind of adopted all those ideas as my own. But then as I grew and I got older and I started getting exposed to more different political ideas and stuff, I started to evolve my ideas.
How old were you when you were listening to Michael Savage?
Third and fourth grade.
Wow. How'd you even discover Michael Savage in third and fourth grade?
My parents have always been big talk radio listeners, so they listened to this station a lot. But then my dad would sometimes play conservative talk in the car, and that's how I got exposed to it first.
Let's hear another clip from your piece. Here you're talking to a fellow student who's 1 year older than you, and you ask her what she remembers about that day.
It's kind of a long time ago. Can you even remember it? I can't remember it.
She's in the grade above me, so I was like, wait a second. How can you not remember that?
The next day, my dad's like, oh, by the way, yesterday a building fell over. I'm just like, okay. I figured it was just like someone's house. He never told me anything.
That's all you remember?
No, that's not all I remember. That's all I had. I learned, I think, a year later that they didn't let me watch these. I watched SpongeBob.
She watched SpongeBob. Do you think most of your classmates are like that, were like that?
That definitely represents a lot of them. Just they were kind of didn't even know what was going on at the time because a lot of us were so young and different parents had different approaches towards how they were going to talk about this with their kids.
How did your parents talk about it with you? What's your earliest memory of that?
Well, my mom pulled me out of school that day. And then I remember they kind of explained to me what happened, but they didn't let me watch like the news coverage because they thought it was too sensational for a kid my age.
Probably a good choice.
And then as I grew up, I would learn more and more and I'd start seeing the news coverage and I listened to the 9/11 commission hearings on WNYC. And So my understanding kind of grew as I got older.
Does it frustrate you as somebody who's obviously so clued into the news and keyed in? Does it upset you? Does it frustrate you that so many of your peers are not paying attention?
I wish a lot of my peers would pay more attention to the news, but I realize there's not really anything I can do to force them. They just have to come to that on their own.
And they just think you're some kind of wonk?
Yeah.
So Cliff Channon, Education Director of the 9/11 Memorial and Museum, is the fact that many young people didn't engage at all something you account for when thinking about education and 9/11? So how do you approach it from your standpoint, you know, with the range of the Brendans of the world to the people who are watching SpongeBob?
Well, I think that's quite a wide range, isn't it? And I think it depends a lot on the age of the students or the young people that you're involved with. I mean, when you're speaking of the age that Brendan was at that point, which is 6 or 7 years old, it's probably something that a kid that age isn't really going to understand. I mean, we've heard, for example, any number of stories of young kids who watched the TV broadcast and the repeated transmission of this video of the towers being struck, they thought it was happening again and again. And so a child that age is not really going to do very well with that kind of material because it's far beyond at this point what they can grasp. As you get older, of course, you know, the complexities of the event become really fertile ground for teaching and for exploring these issues. But obviously, they're very complicated, they're very sensitive, and they're very difficult because of the nature of the conversations that come out of them. And one of the other things we've found is that you really have to think about the teachers who are being asked to do this. The teachers will have memories of 9/11, even if the students don't. And, you know, they need to be able to recognize in advance that this may challenge them. They may express emotion in class that they're not used to doing. So, you know, there's a very delicate dynamic in the classroom that is a part of all of this.
And as I mentioned on Tuesday's show, we spoke with two people helping to put together a curriculum for school teachers, K through 12. And one of the things they emphasized is the importance of putting 9/11 in context, not just historical context, but in terms of trauma and emotion, so that you don't traumatize or re-traumatize any of the kids, depending on their age. So the curriculum begins with discussions of trauma and pain, then the historical roots of terrorism, and it isn't until midway through that 9/11 itself comes into the picture. Is that your approach as well?
Well, yes. I mean, I know very well the very good efforts in New Jersey, and we ourselves are putting together and will be soon releasing a whole series of lessons that go on the K through 12, all the levels of K through 12. Yes, it really is so dependent on the age of the student and a getting them comfortable in the classroom setting with the idea that there are going to be uncomfortable things happening, and that means communications with the parents. That means, you know, a really open dialogue. The one thing we've tried to do in building the many materials that we've produced around 9/11, we've tried to bring out of the museum collections stories of individuals. And so this mass quality of the event, which is certainly a part of the event, particularly for younger kids, is not necessarily the focus of where the lesson should start. That if you can find a person in the situation through an artifact or an oral history or something like that, that you can begin to get into the story at the human level, and obviously, depending on the age, you can expand it further than that.
And I gather Norton's and Brendan's stories are going into your archive, is that right?
Absolutely. The Radio Rookies reports are going to become part of the museum collection.
That's great. So let me ask our rookies, Norton, Brendan, did your teachers take this kind of approach, or I asked you, Brendan, what you remember about your parents telling you about 9/11. For both of you, what about your teachers? Norhan, what about for you? You were in seventh grade at the time.
Yes. Well, honestly, my teachers really didn't discuss it much. A lot of what I had to learn, I had to do on my own. I don't remember really much of any of my teachers really bringing it up during the classroom. I feel like they really depended much on our parents to kind of let us in. And I can understand that to a certain extent, because I'm sure these teachers weren't 100% sure how much of the information they were going to tell their students and how much the parents wanted them to hear. And so I guess they were just very vague about a tragedy happening here in New York City. And so they really didn't talk much about it. But as far as the education aspect of it, I know that growing up, going on to high school, so even after seventh and eighth, and once I got to ninth grade, I began to see that even the teachers weren't the most eloquent or intellectual individuals when it came to the 9/11. What happened on 9/11? I remember I was taking an exam one time, and my pen had blew up, so the ink was coming all over my hands, and I tried to get my teacher's attention. I didn't want to, let her know that I was cheating, and so I said, Miss, my pen blew up, I need a new pen, or can I go wash my hands real quick? And her initial reaction was like, your pen blew up, what are you, a terrorist? Yes, and these are the things that, that's being said. And so I don't know if I really rely much on my teachers to kind of enlighten and guide me, because had any other individual, had been said this, they probably would have taken it differently. I don't know if you heard, but there's a new 9/11 coloring book that just came out. And it's meant to be a tribute to the 10th anniversary, and it's titled The Kids' Book of Freedom. And in the book, there's a drawing of a Navy SEAL shooting at Bin Laden, who is hiding behind a hijabi woman. And a woman wearing hijab is a woman wearing a headscarf, in which I wear. And this textbook, it reads, "Children is the truth. The terrorist acts were done by, freedom-hating radical Islamic Muslim extremists. These crazy people hate America and the way that we live, and so this is a free society." And it's really upsetting, and it's sad to think that even 10 years, when you feel like you are moving forward, there's so many pushbacks. And you have things like these coloring books coming out to children who will be reading this and who will grow up surrounding this. And it's just sad to look at my nephews, for example, and to know that this is what they're up against. I mean, this is what they're going to have to deal with. And it's not just my generation. It's the generation after, and the after that, and the after that. Mm. And so if we don't have teachers actually taking the initiative to educate students and to make sure that they're also educating them in a sense that they're using, politically correct terms as well. And, to let them know that, granted, like, these terrorists that did commit these acts, yes, they may have said that they did this in the name of Islam. Yes, they may identify themselves as Muslims. But these extremists are a small fraction of Muslims. They are, we are 1.57 billion individuals, and not all of us believe that.
Can I get the two of you to talk to each other, Brendan and Norhan? Do you already know each other by being in the Radio Rookies program?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So Brendan, what do you guys talk about?
All kinds of different stuff.
SpongeBob?
I don't think we've talked about SpongeBob.
No, never. I'm not really a big fan of SpongeBob, to be quite honest.
So what do you want to ask Norhan that you haven't had the chance to, putting you both on the spot? Or Norhan, what do you want to ask Brendan? Have you discussed his political evolution from neocon to whatever he is now? Or I don't know, whatever.
I mean, absolutely. I know one of the things that Brendan and I had discussed is one of our conversations together, he had mentioned that he wanted to join the military as soon as he graduates from high school. And so my initial reaction was, why? I'm really interested in this. you know, I may be opposed to the war, but at the same time, I have to support the troops that are also fighting for my freedom in this country. And so, I mean, my opinion, and you will hear in my piece, about the military fluctuates, especially after the events of Abu Ghraib in 2004. And so my first initial reaction to Brendan was like, oh, really, you want to join the military? Talk to me about that. Like, I want to hear all about it. And so we had a lengthy discussion mm-hmm. about, like, why he wants to join and what he wants to do afterwards.
Brendan, and why do you?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say that I, like Norhead, I also don't support I guess it would be like 2.5 wars we're in right now, because I don't see why we're fighting them. But I feel like I'm not always pro-war, but I'm always pro-troops. So I've always supported our military and what they do, because it's not really their fault where the politicians send them. So I want to join the military because I've felt very patriotic ever since I was very young, and I've always wanted to be a part of something like that. So it just feels like something that I should do because of who I am and the way I feel about our country.
What's your fantasy, what's your image in your mind of what you would be doing in the military?
Well, unlike a lot of people my age who want to join the military, I don't have like these kind of like video game delusions about being like Rambo and running around and being like a one-man army. I just want to, however I can serve my country the best in a role in the military, I will do. So whether that's a combat role or whether that's marketing or communications or any of the hundreds of other jobs the military has, I just want to serve the military however best I can.
You said that you've been patriotic since you were very little. What does that patriotism mean to you, or what does it feel like?
Well, the best way I've found to describe my patriotism is that I always love my country, but I don't always love my government. So I feel like being patriotic means doing what's best for your country, even if it's not necessarily the best thing for you personally.
Norhan, do you think about patriotism? Do you have patriotic feelings?
Absolutely. I mean, as an American, I'm definitely patriotic. But as Brendan mentioned, you know, I may believe in the founding, you know, values of this country, but do I always agree with what our, you know, the choices that our government makes? Absolutely not. And so, I mean, I definitely have to echo what Brendan had just mentioned right now. It's true. You know, we may not necessarily agree with everything that happens in the government, and we may not necessarily feel like everything that is being done is for the benefit of this country. And so I'm definitely patriotic in that I love this country, and I always wanted to see it at its best. And, you know, I'm not the only Muslim American that feels this way, and I get upset when people, you know, look at me and they say, well, you must be the minority of Muslims. No, majority of the Muslims, if not all Muslim Americans, feel this way. I mean, this is one of the reasons why we love this country and why we live in it and why we work.
Stirs your heart about America? What makes you, what about America makes you the most patriotic?
The freedom that we have here. The freedom, the fact that I'm free to do whatever, you know, whatever I want, so long as, of course, it's legal. But, you know, the freedom that I have, the values, the liberty that this country stands for, this is what makes me patriotic, the fact that I am proud to be an American. But, of course, there are some instances where I didn't feel too proud to be American, and Abu Ghraib was one of them. And so, you know, I'm happy that I have this freedom. You know, my parents come from Egyptian descent, and so that freedom somewhat still exists in Egypt, where women can wear the headscarf and not wear the headscarf, you know. And in America, I'm free to choose whether I want to wear it or I don't want to wear it, you know. And so that's one of the things that I value about this country. However, do Americans really live up to that freedom and respect others' freedom? No. And so I feel like as an American, I'm upholding those values mm-hmm. by standing up and saying, I'm free to do whatever I want. I'm free to be the Muslim that I am today. And I'm free to make these choices on my own without anyone telling me that I need to go back to my country, because this is my country and I'm not going anywhere. Neither are the thousands and, you know, Muslims here in the United States. And so I just want, you know, for people to know that.
And Brendan, what is it for you?
Well, I definitely have to echo a lot of what Norhan just said about how you're free to do whatever you want. And even if they're, just as everywhere in humanity, whenever you get a group of people, there's always going to be that one person who has to be, like, mean or has to try and hurt people like that teacher did to Norhan and other people who are racist against Muslims and stuff like that. But they have the freedom to do that as an American, and you have the freedom to ignore them or go somewhere else. What's important about this country is that even if those people get elected into public office or become leaders, they still can't enforce those policies against Muslims, even if they wanted to, because of the Constitution and the liberty and freedom we have here.
Cliff Channon, Education Director of the 9/11 Memorial and Museum. I think with radio rookies like Norhan and Brendan, our country has a bright future. Do you want to give us just a last word about how this kind of conversation that they were just having might be reflected at the Memorial and Museum?
Well, you've anticipated my thoughts, Brian. I really have to just express my admiration, and I was really listening, you know, with rapt attention to both of them. That's the kind of stuff that we would like to produce and set the groundwork for the kinds of exchanges that you've just heard. I mean, there are many different views. You've just heard two of them. There are multiples upon multiples that could be added to them. But what I'm most taken with and hope that we can achieve in what we do is the level of seriousness that you've heard and the level of mutual respect that you've heard. This is an extremely difficult conversation. These are issues that are going to leave people feeling wounded in some ways. There have been people murdered on September 11th because of this clash and the ideas that are involved, and this is very, very very, very shallow, very, very thin ice. And we all need to be committed to working together to talk these things through and to learn what happened.
Now, just to be clear, Cliff, your museum doesn't actually open until a year from now. It will not be open for the 10th anniversary, correct?
That is correct. The memorial opens on the 10th anniversary. The museum underground opens a year later.
So Clifford Channon, who will be director of education at that museum, thank you so much for joining us and joining our two WNYC Radio Rookies, Brendan Illis and Norhan Basuni. This Radio Rookies series launches today on WNYC.org. We have a link right there, and you can listen for these pieces during Morning Edition on the air. Norhan's and Brendan's are scheduled for next Tuesday and Wednesday mornings, respectively. So thanks to all of you. It's been a wonderful discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you so much for having us.
Good luck to everybody. And the next pairing in our series of 9/11 conversations tomorrow, British historian Tariq Ali with Newsweek Paris bureau chief Chris Dickey on reaction around the world and how our multicultural cities changed because of September 11th. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up next hour, why we're so bad at talking about grief and what grievers say they need in a big new survey by Slate. Stay tuned.